welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 326. I'm Adam, and I am usually referred to as the Master.
And I knew you were going to say that.
Is,
that's a good
hang
one.
On, here is, this has got to be worth one of these. Debbie Melrose is bothered turning up for the show.
Thank you. I'm here all week. Try the veal. Sylvia, would you check Mr. McDermott's entitlement on termination of employment, please?
Kirby Bartlett's alone.
Why, you insolent primitive.
Andy Nunny.
No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, Joe, I'm rather looking forward to it.
And she's bothered turning up for the show again. It's Mary Lang.
Thank you.
Hang on.
I get the full thing.
That's what she said.
What's wrong with being childish? I like being childish.
And yes, we seem to be back after several weeks of co-members of this show having not been bothered, apart from Andy, not been bothered
Thank
to
you.
Show up
Thank you.
For the recordings. Ashley Hugh says, Emma said hello. Obviously, this is a pre-recording thing that we were just having a little bit of a... never mind. Right, let's move on. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's been, what, 5-6 weeks since we were all on here together.
Well, that's Debbie's fault and Mary's fault and your fault.
My fault.
Oh, life. It's called life.
Well, I've been here. Don't know what I've had to put up with.
It was Chicago TARDIS's fault, too.
Mm. Yes.
Right, which is really a good segue because Mary's been at Chicago TARDIS and she's now going to give us a bit of a report about Chicago TARDIS. Go on.
So yes, I was at Chicago TARDIS last weekend, and it was a great time. Every time I go, I seem to run into more people that I see just from year to year. And
do you say sorry when you run into them?
And attendance was down this year, they reported. Well, we didn't have a doctor this year, so they were blaming it partly on that, partly on the economy, that there were a lot of people who just, sent their apologies because they couldn't afford it this year. And I know of the six people that I usually meet up with every year, three were not there, and one I know.
Well, there you go then. Matthew Kressel
being one of them, who couldn't make it because financially he couldn't afford to come this year. But the guests that were there were wonderful. I spent a lot of time talking with every one of them except Michelle Gomez, because she was the big star. So she was only, there to appear on stage and to do autographs and photographs. So she wasn't one that you had an opportunity to sit and talk with. But when she was on
Master
stage...
Master doesn't talk to anybody.
She was hilarious. And boy, that lady has a dirty mouth.
Well, Debbie and I have met her, haven't we, Debbie?
Sorry?
Debbie and I have met her, haven't we, Debbie?
Yes, we have. Yeah, she's amazing.
She is. But apparently, and they said that too, they planned on her being a bigger draw than she ended up being. So that was, a little bit of a disappointment for them. And for me, one of the highlights was that I was chosen to lead up a panel with two other people about the Second Doctor, which I felt really good about because we had just been, slogging through all of those episodes. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I had, some opinions that I could share. and I got to meet up with the Omega Podcast people because one
I
of the...
I thought they'd stopped.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought they'd stopped. I thought the Omega Podcast...
Yeah, I thought they'd stopped the Omega Podcast.
Yeah, well, but I mean, that's what they're known for is their podcast. Okay. So Ben Ellis was on the panel with me, and he's part of the Omega Podcast.
Oh.
Catherine O'Sullivan, who I don't know if she was ever on the podcast, but Ben kept referring to her as being, the one that inspired him to go back and listen to the classic and watch the classic Doctor.
She's really interesting. I've met her several times.
She is. And then Liz McDonald, also part of Omega Podcast, came up and said hi, and we talked a little bit. But the fun thing was when I walked into the room to, you know, go up, and they put us in like one of the smallest panel rooms. I guess they didn't think it was going to be that interesting of a topic. When I walked in, the room was packed. Every chair was full. So we had to like call out to people who were coming in. Okay, there's an empty chair here. Oh, here's a couple of empty seats. And then people still kept coming in. So we had people lining the walls as well as in the seats. I'm thinking the room seated 80 to 100 people. And so I guess there were a lot of interest in the second doctor. Of course, the con kind of featured the second doctor. They had his companions there. So and we had a nice, a lively conversation. I kept throwing out, you know, my sort of negative opinions, basically to get people talking, and they did. So we had some fun, and that. From that came a few people up to me to asking about the podcast.
Yay.
So hopefully we have a few additional listeners.
Did you manage to plug us in front of this large crowd of people?
Well, of course.
What a nice lady. Isn't she a nice lady, everybody?
She's here for the podcast, honestly.
I had a couple who actually on their cell phones right there looked up our podcast to show it to me to say, is this the one? And I said, yeah, that's the one. So we garnered a few additional listeners.
Did you tell them to ignore the bickering?
Yeah. No, I said, you know, that we're like a family. We sit around and, you know, and are kind of snarky with each other.
What bickering, Debbie? Debbie, yeah. Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt you, Mary. Bickering?
Yes.
What bickering?
Yes.
I don't bicker.
Yes.
Anybody else bicker?
All the time.
No, oh, yes, we do not.
Good. We don't fight, we bicker. It's
no,
great.
We don't.
We disagree.
No, we don't.
It's bicker time season. We're allowed to do this out of this curve.
No, we are not. We don't bicker. You
yes,
bicker.
We do.
I don't.
We don't fight.
No, we don't.
No.
Oh, yes, we do.
Anyway, right, sorry, Mary, carry on.
Bit of bickering was brought to you by the 20 megabytes.
Is this going to be the 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
No, probably about 3 hours at this rate.
I, of course, spent most of my time talking with the Big Finish people because they're the ones that have kept Doctor Who alive for me these last 2 or 3 years. And the most amazing one that I met was Elliot Chapman, who on the recordings, he does Ben as one of the Second Doctor companions, and he does an amazing job of it, I might add. But the funny thing is he's quite a vocal expert. He talks about how he pitches different voices and, you know, what you can do to, you know, to more closely be like that person so that you can accurately portray them. And he sat there at the table as we were, you know, doing breakfast and that. And he was doing every one of the doctors, and he did every one of them, I think, dead on. It was really fun. Mm. And I spent some time talking with Tim Treloar, who voices the third doctor for Big Finish. And, you know, and he was kind of shrugging his way through going, I don't know. I just listen to him a lot. I have him on my iPod. I lots of snippets of him talking. And I just, as I'm on my way to do the recording, I'm just listening to him a lot. So when I come in, I just do it. So, you know, we had the technocrat and we had the, oh, I don't know. I just do it.
Just for the benefit of our listeners who are watching, here is a picture of me with Elliot Chapman. There's a picture. Hang on. I'm holding the other ones. I can't. Right. There's the picture. All right. There's me with all these people. Elliot Chapman's here. And there he signed it. Look. You see? It says Elliot Chapman. But the picture is slightly reversed there, I'm afraid. But so you can't see the full benefit of it. Sorry about that, Mary. Just wanted to give our.
I will be so glad when I have fast internet and can actually see these things.
Well, it should be posted.
So, and I think I asked you when you posted that picture if you were aware of who he was.
I knew he was a big Finnish actor. That's all I knew. Yeah, I didn't really get a chance to speak to him.
He's really good. I spent a lot of time also talking with Wendy Padbury, who was absolutely delightful. Listening and talking with her, it's like interacting with Zoe Harriet. I mean, she is Zoe Harriet.
So we're going to get these audios later on, are we?
What
don't
do you mean?
Park Mary. Winding you up.
Yes, winding me up.
Well, Kirby would expect it, wouldn't he?
The one person I didn't talk much with is Fraser Hines,
yes,
because he's at all these conventions.
Yeah, he's elusive,
and
isn't he?
Carl, it's like you run out of things to talk about. But anyway, it was great fun, and I'm going to be going again next year. While I'm at it, let me once again promote the con that's going to happen here in Dayton, Ohio, called Time Lord Expo. And you've probably seen me because I've plastered it everywhere.
Is that another convention we can be the official podcast of then?
Along with Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred.
Mm.
So that's going to be good.
When is it?
In October.
Okay. October. Okay. But is that another one we can be the official podcast of then?
I don't know, because I've just had a few conversations with the organizer. I don't really know what he has in mind yet.
That's just a way of possibly dodging the possibility. Also, you know, you said about Fraser Hines. When I spoke to Fraser Hines in Newcastle, it was just to remind him of the fact that he phoned me up to invite himself onto the show. He didn't remember this, but there you go. Anything else, Mary?
No, not about the con.
Mm-mm. We had a great time.
I did. And I met up and talked with one of the what I would call the royalty of podcasters, Stephen Shapansky.
Who hadn't heard of us either.
Oh, wow.
That's
yeah.
Royalty.
Yeah. So, he picked me out in the crowd. You know, he came up to talk to me, and I thought, really?
So,
has he heard of us?
Well, yeah, I think it was 3 years ago we had a podcasting panel that I was on with him. So I met him then, and, you know, we had conversations then. So I don't know if he remembered me from
then. Well,
it's
nice to know that he's heard of us. He's probably forgotten about us again, but maybe next time you meet him, he will have heard of us again.
Well, he's doing probably 3 or 4 podcasts of his own right now. So doesn't
nice that
the
people have time on their hands, isn't it? Hey. Well, anyway, thank you, Mary. I'm glad you had a really good time. Aaron T. Butcher said, slogging through, what a cheek. And then he said, Elliot writes in mirror writing. Yeah, because, of course, with the pictures. Yes, so let's move on. We are looking at Terror of the Autons today. I hope everybody's been paying attention to the last few stories, especially the ones that decided they didn't want to be part of the John Pertwee part of the journey so far. I'm not mentioning any names. However, there will be a quiz. We haven't had a quiz for the last few weeks, so I hope you've been paying attention.
Is it going to be a quiz on what all?
A big pardon?
Is it going to be a quiz just on Terror of the Autons or on more than Terror of the Autons?
More than Terror of the Autons.
I've got my books for the last two.
Well,
I'm in trouble.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm in trouble too.
So Terror of the Autons begins with a circus. And I thought looking at these clips of him walking past these animals, and they wouldn't be allowed to do that nowadays. And
not
I was thinking how badly kept the animals were anyway. And I felt really, really bad.
Someone looked at actually.
Master?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
This particular circus was, I forget the name of it, Jacob's Brothers, something like that.
Yeah.
They were on BBC a lot because apparently the BBC had an official circus that they would use for certain things, and this circus was not the circus that they would use officially. So this circus kept giving them like facilities to use in hopes that they would be chosen as the official circus of the BBC. And it finally happened 8 years after this was filmed.
Great. Thank you for that, Kirby. Right. Yeah. So
why do they call it a horse box?
Oh, let me know.
We might call it a horse trailer, but we don't call it a horse box.
But it doesn't even look like something you would put horses in.
It's never just mind a that. Box that horses go in, hence
it doesn't matter,
box.
Never
England
mind.
Very,
it doesn't matter. Anyway,
yes, it does.
No, it doesn't. Anyway, a TARDIS, clearly a TARDIS materializes, because we get this TARDIS materialization sound effect when this trailer, that's what I'm going to call
it. And it's also blue.
Yeah, arrives. Yes. Of course, they get the iconic words from the Master. I'm usually referred to as the Master. And instantly, you fall in love with Roger Delgado.
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter whether you've never seen him before.
Amazing.
Instant shining light on the screen. Ian Kirk says,
He becomes a parody of himself, but right now he's fresh and it's wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, this was amazing because I'd never seen this, and to see his first appearance was terrific. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never Kirk seen this one before either, even though I'd seen him as the Master.
Just a minute, sorry.
Yes, exactly.
Before it disappears off my screen, Ian Kirk says, circus sequences by courtesy of Robert Brothers Circus. And Alan T. Butcher says,
I said that first.
Alan T. Butcher says, why do they call it a police box? Right.
Is this a box that policemen go in? There you go, like
everything seems to be a box.
What's quite interesting about this particular sequence is that there's a shot of the circus owner with some rockets in the background, and that's so we go from film to CSO very quickly, and it looks a bit out of place. Mm-hmm. And then the Doctor's actually messing around with the actual TARDIS now, so we see these occasional puffs.
Wait,
what do you
mean the circus owner and then the rockets? They moved. They switched from the circus to the museum, which is referred to in
maybe
following
it was,
scene.
But I'm saying it looked a bit odd where it went from the film to CSO video. It just looked a bit strange. Anyway, so the Doctor is now wearing a sort of red velvet jacket, and this is where he meets Jo for the first time. Now, of course, initially he's not really interested in Jo, especially where she fires a fire extinguisher at his kit. And he didn't like her at all. And then there's a complete turnaround, very quick turnaround, where they suddenly become the best of friends, which is good, because I quite like Jo. And then we have the scene from Logopolis where they... that's a different story, isn't it?
The Master comes in with the third Doctor in a radio telescope and leaves with the fourth Doctor with a radio telescope.
Yes. So anyway, this is obviously the first time we see the Master using his compression thingy.
They don't call it that yet.
Tissue compression eliminator.
It doesn't have that name yet.
No. And then we see the Nestine ball again that we saw only a few weeks ago on the 20 megabyte podcast. Some of you that could have been bothered to have actually been on the show for the last few years would know what I'm talking about. Sorry, Debbie, what did you say?
I saw that one.
Did you?
Yes, and I was on for it too. So
that's probably the last one you were on. Anyway.
Yes, I only missed one.
The last comment that about the eliminate the tissue commission eliminator. The Master was very polite about the way he used it, because he would actually destroy people, but he's so polite about the way he did it. It was wonderful.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. I actually wrote this years ago. I actually wrote on the special toy room, the Doctor of Priest Society newsletter, and I remember writing about this, saying how polite the Master was about the way he killed people. You know, he would take your granny across the road, but he compress her first, make it easier. Yeah. I thought he's so urbane and polite and delightful in what he does.
Alan T. Butcher says, I want to go in the Nastine ball. Anyway, right. Yeah, it got me thinking when you said about that, and now I've forgotten.
Oh, thank you.
Damn. A fairly good point I wanted to mention. Maybe if I scroll back a bit, it might remind me. What were you talking about anyway? Sorry, Andy.
What was it? I said how the Master is so polite.
Yes, that was it.
He is so charming. I mean, he really is.
Yes, all right. Yes,
the way he deals with his enemies.
I know you just said that.
He is. Yeah, but he's so polite.
He got you thinking.
Yes, you got me thinking. I nearly remembered what I'd have said then. Yes, no, it's that scene where he says they have humans have a weakness I tend to exploit in the destruction of humanity. It's the way he said that line. It's like it hasn't word for word, but essentially that's what he said. You've all forgotten, haven't you? Well, you're not going to be any very good in the quiz this week, are you? Anyway.
Who knows?
Then we see this this sort of Time Lord turn up dressed in a bowler hat. And
That was so silly.
Yeah.
It was quite reminiscent of the first Doctor, apart from the bowler hat, because he's got the sort of cane stick and dark
clothes. I thought
that was an umbrella. Is it an umbrella? You sure? Or maybe it just didn't... It didn't look too good on this CSO.
It's an umbrella.
All right, well, it looked like a cane stick because it didn't quite render properly. You're...
Well, right, in the CSO, when you see him in CSO, it's fading in and out with the edges.
Yes, anyway, so...
Making excuses, huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's quite...
I don't make excuses for CSO.
It's a very cameo scene, that, with this particular actor, obviously. But quite enjoyable, nevertheless. The Doctor defuses the Master's bomb.
Master?
Yes.
Why did he not break the window and go in through the window?
Oh, yeah. And the way he even says, look at this through the door. I mean, his lungs through the door. Well, he could look at it through the window. It's huge.
The Master quickly makes friends with Farrell, who only appeared in the previous story.
He's eventually going to become Davros.
I know, but he was in the Ambassadors of Death. Master? So that's not the previous story, Mysterious Series, yes.
You back with the previous scene where we see poor old Gooch.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
He's been tissue compressioned.
Yes.
The size of a boiled egg.
Speaking of CSO, they had a little bit of a problem with his shadow.
They did.
They could, every time they tried to process with the CSO, they wanted his shadow to show there, and it wouldn't come through. So what they ended up doing was they made it this big brown cutout of a shadow, and he's sitting on a piece of brown paper, which is the shape of his shadow.
Well, that's interesting, isn't everyone? Well done, Kirby. So, yes.
Of course it is.
Hang on, things packed in. It went
back
to sleep.
Back to Davros. You're back to go.
Yes. Of course, another thing I forgot to mention is we meet Captain Yates, who I met actually in October, along with Sergeant Benton, and had my picture taken. But I think dig that picture out for the viewers. No, that's Colin Baker. No, who's that one? That's me and Isabella by the TARDIS. No, that's me and Sharon Jews. Oh no, that's me and Sylvester McCoy.
You're just name dropping, aren't you?
That's me and the two doctors. That's me and John Levine, but that's not the picture I'm looking for. There we are. This is the one.
I don't like this story, by the way.
Never you mind. This is me with Benton and Yates. There we are.
I had my picture taken with them and Katie Manning last year.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Anyway, right, so back to the story. So, like I say, we meet Captain Yates for the first time. A point.
Master?
Grief. I nearly got to the end of the sentence. Yes. Yes.
Over here, we say cephalopod.
Do you
not
now?
Not cephalopod.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
So did you learn to say it cephalopod or cephalopod?
I've never heard of the blooming word. I've not heard it. To say it, say it either way.
I learned it as cephalopod.
Okay. So I'm not crazy.
No.
Can I move on now? Like I say, right, now I've got to get this to catch up with itself. So the doctor... Oh, yeah. The master has nicked the nesting thingy from a unit source because it's in a box that says unit on it. So.
Yeah, that's really so obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a box there with unit written on it, and it's like, oh my goodness, I might guess that's
secret organization, they tend to have their signs
all
over the place.
yeah.
So Jo, who's been told to stay behind, goes and spies on the master.
Yeah, she finds
Farrell.
The immediate factory.
Yeah.
How did she do that? Yeah, I've got
master.
A question mark next
yes.
to it.
She master, really is rather good. Is... I mean, Jo is so is really very clever, actually, in what she finds out.
Yes.
You know, going behind the scenes to the doctor and the brigadier.
Yeah.
But she finds out so much stuff. I mean, is the brigadier and the doctor set actually really thick or what?
I don't know.
How does Joe find...
Jeff Waddle says the book was good.
Master.
Yes.
Fair enough.
That is a real plastics factory. It was called Thermoplastics, then became Echo Mold. It's been... The buildings have been torn down now.
Okay. Thank you for that, Kirby. Ian Kirk says, I learnt it
as... It was in Bedfordshire.
Oi! Be quiet. Ian Kirk says, I learnt it at Cephalopod... as it is from the Latin, who do not have a soft C. So there you go, it's actually cephalopod. Now that's from me.
Okay, I will then change the way that I say it.
Don't think it makes
and
a difference.
People will look at me like I'm cuckoo.
Well, like Americans can't say the phrase Nikon properly, the camera company Nikon. They call it Nikon. Even
Nikon.
And it's a Japanese blooming word, and the Japanese call it Nikon. So why do the Americans change it to Nikon? God's sake, it doesn't matter as long as people understand what you're talking about. Right, can we get back to Doctor Who, for goodness sake?
Right, we're talking about Doctor Who.
Right, so Jo knocks over a few things. She's always been clumsy, or she hadn't always been clumsy at this point because this is her first episode, but it was a forerunner for... sort of exhibiting Joe's future clumsiness. She gets caught by Colonel Masters. Interesting name. Somebody called the Master.
Slightly obvious, isn't it?
She gets hypnotised. And she's hypnotised into essentially killing the Doctor by blowing him up. Now, that's fair enough, but what I couldn't get is, obviously, she undoes the box and she can't undo it. She's trying to yank it open. It doesn't open. Why would the Master set it up to... He wants to blow everything up, so why would he not make sure that once you open the box, it would actually do its job?
Because my theory is that they... my hypothesis is that they tied the rope around it after they found it. And the rope is what's preventing it from being open.
Yeah, I saw that, but just, you know. So that's episode one. Is that the scene where she punches somebody in the ghoulies?
Yes.
Blow to the belly.
I thought it was really funny.
He goes flying.
This big tough soldier taken out by a little girl by a punch to the ghoulies. So anyway, the Doctor says, stop her, that's a bomb. He knows it's a bomb, obviously, because it's smoking and it's got the word unit on the side of the box. No, it hasn't. No, it wasn't. It got unit. Oh, it did have unit. Oh, anyway.
It does have unit.
That's right. So he lobs it through the window, and they just happen to be by a canal, and it explodes in the canal. Because she's failed to blow up the Doctor, she goes into a bit of a sort of...
Actually,
that's
Queen's
trance.
Wharf in Hammersmith.
Post-hypnotic alienation she goes
anyway,
into.
So the Doctor sits Jo down on a throne. Don't quite know what... I don't think it's a game or a throne.
Master,
for goodness
isn't that supposed to be? Isn't that supposed to be the chair that was inside the TARDIS?
I don't know, but I'm sure you're going to tell me.
It's like what do you call it? The coat rack.
Is it?
It's also supposed to be the one that was inside the TARDIS. The coat rack is not the same style, but it's changed through the years.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyway, so Joe is slightly weirded out. So the Doctor spends time trying to get her out of the trance. Meanwhile, McDermott is shown this really weird carrier bag chair. And
this scene is my favorite scene in the entire show. Fred and I were watching this the other night. She was laughing her head off.
It is really funny, especially when he pulls the chair over himself.
Master.
What?
Negative.
What
he
now?
He is not pulling it on himself. The scene was filmed backwards, so it's not being... He's not pulling it on himself. They wrapped him up in it, and then they inflated it around him, and he's pushing it out.
Okay. I stand corrected. However, it does rather look like he's pushing.
You better prove that you're standing.
No. It does rather look like he's pulling the thing down a bit. But
that's what I thought. What I thought for years.
But that bit where
I'd seen the scene before, not the entire story.
Yeah.
But they explained it in the info text exactly how they did everything. They had to get special fittings for things.
Very good.
Yeah,
it's a very good scene.
I read too that it was filmed in reverse because they couldn't get it to deflate fast enough.
It's a very good scene, and I do love the bit where Farrell says asks about his terms on termination of contract or something like that. You missed that bit, obviously. So the Doctor gets Joe to come.
I like that bit.
That's just what I just said. So the Doctor gets Joe to come round. Meanwhile, Farrell Sr. comes along to throw his weight around the battery, and the Master tries to hypnotise him, but fails. But the Master has another plan to give him this revolting-looking gingerbread man. throws it into the car.
That's pretty much what I called it in my notes.
What, a revolting gingerbread man?
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is make people think of troll dolls, which were very popular at that time.
Ah.
Yes, yeah.
Well, very good. By the way, Ian Kirk says, man-eating chair. Okay. So.
Looks like pudding.
Yeah. So Doctor has spent a lot of this...
I wouldn't want to eat a chair.
Nearly got through that sentence. The Doctor has spent quite a lot of this story fiddling around with a particular piece of equipment, which we now know to be the dematerialization circuit, which he'll be fiddling around with quite a lot over the next four years.
I was going to say, I think that I've seen that before in, like, the only other one of this...
Three Doctors, maybe?
...season of this... Oh, I don't know.
It's what the Time Lords give him at the end of the Three Doctors. It's this new working dematerialization circuit.
Okay.
But anyway, back to Doctor Who. Sorry.
We were talking about Doctor Who.
So the doll starts waking up on the back of the car, but of course he's getting hot, so he opens his windows up and the doll goes back to sleep. And then we see that this is a bit that sort of thought was a bit weird. The shot from inside the circus, all the elephants being mistreated. I wish you wouldn't see that now. That was quite a strange scene. The elephants being whipped into doing these strange and unnatural dances.
I was wondering too. I was like, what? I don't remember that.
Of course.
Yeah, there is a scene of the elephants all turning together.
Yes.
Yeah. Joe stowing away in the back of Bessie.
And judging by the as the elephants walk past John Pertwee, they were baby elephants because John Pertwee's tall, but he's not that tall. And then he's Toberman.
Master?
Oh,
master.
What
master.
Now?
The man who is leading the baby elephant that the Doctor interacts with is the actual owner of the circus.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyway,
and then Toberman shows up.
Anyway, Toberman shows up. And then we have this is a very lovely romantic conversation between Farrell Sr. and his missus, who tends to be the stereotypical sort of middle-aged missus that they seem to have in Doctor Who at this stage. We've had three of them so far. We've had this one. We've had the farmer's wife in the Doctor and the Silurians, and we've had the wife of the poacher in Spearhead from Space. Very similar type. So
they weren't terribly romantic. That couple.
Well, this couple, the ones that are the most obviously in love still.
Master?
Yes, yes.
They often, when they were putting together a mundane set like this one of just a sitting room, they would take pieces from other sets. The round window is from the set of the preschool series Play School.
Thank you.
Play School, yeah. We all recognize the round window.
Yes, thank you. Ian Kirk says, sorry, Jeff Waddle says, sofa so good. And then Ian Kirk said, three chairs for Mr. Farrell. Hip, hip. Yeah, I'm glad they got a laugh out of Kirby. Anyway, like I say, Toberman is keeps on yanking the doctor's arms up behind his back and hurting him a little bit. But the doctor sort of very suavely sort of fends off all these acts of aggression.
What about when the guy blows smoke into the doctor's face?
Yeah, he wouldn't have done that because John Pertwee was a smoker. So anyway, the plastic doll gets up and kills Mr. Farrell Sr. and Mrs. Farrell goes, the doctor then sees Joe at the window, who rather psychically organises the distraction that allows the doctor to escape. And then the doctor nearly gets killed by the other scientist from the research centre. But he sort of makes him realise that he's under the control of the master, so he blows himself up instead.
He's trying to get rid of it, apparently. And I'm like, by holding it?
Yeah. And then it all happens in this episode, doesn't it? Then the doctor thinks he's getting rescued by a couple of policemen because they're basically under attack from a baying mob, which reminded me of that scene from Shrek. And of course, he's still playing around with this dematerialization because he's nicked it out of the master's TARDIS.
Yes.
And then there's a scene where Joe realizes they're not quite going where she'd expect them to go. And the doctor asks for the warrant card.
Yeah.
Now, this scene was a bit weird because
they crash relatively gently in the quarry.
No, what gets me is the bloke, the passenger in the car who turns round. Now, if I was in the car, I wouldn't turn round. It was a natural, unnatural way to turn round to the left. I'd be turning round to the right to look at the people in the back.
Was he the driver?
No, he's not the driver. He was a passenger, dear. If you look in that scene, you can see the steering wheel by the other character. And obviously, I've also seen the next episode. One of the Autons is just a human. The other ones, you can see his plastic face. And I thought, that's odd. I thought that was the driver. And it wasn't the driver because he got out the right side.
And he's a rather chunky human, too.
Yes.
Yes, he is very chunky.
But yeah, it was the passenger. But that's why it didn't look right because he was turning over his left shoulder. Maybe I'm thinking because it, with a seatbelt on, you wouldn't have had a seatbelt in those days. It would have been more difficult to turn over that way around.
That's why I thought he was the driver because he looked over the left shoulder.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? That's what I thought. But so if you watch the scene, you can see the steering wheel in front of the other.
When he tries to open the door to chase after the doctor and Joe, you can see that he is the passenger. Now. Yeah. I found it strange. I found it strange that they changed the design of the Autons. And then when the Autons came back in the modern era, they were back looking more like the original Autons from the first Auton story.
Yes, well, that doesn't matter if they change. They changed Cybermen, they changed Daleks, so I wouldn't worry too much about it. Anyway, so the Doctor and Joe...
I didn't like this design.
Well, I apologise for that. I'll have a word with the designers later. At the moment, I'm trying to cover the episode. So the Doctor and Joe managed to sort of jump out of this moving car. It does crash, but they don't get injured. Amazing, because it must have been crashing very slowly as they didn't get any whiplash injuries at all.
I said relatively gently crashes into the quarry. Yeah.
And then the Brigadier turns up with Yates and nearly gets shot by an Auton. And then they do actually get rescued. There's lots of stunt work
mini
going
gun battles,
on.
Isn't there, in this story?
Now, I was under the impression that was Benton. That was Benton that got shot, and yet then he looks fine.
No, it wasn't Benton getting shot.
No, it's the guy in the red shirt.
Yeah, it's a red shirt.
Red
unit
shirt
officer.
Unit guy.
Yes. The doctor has changed now into a black.
Shot.
Sorry, the doctor.
So you notice when these guys get shot, it's very theatrical.
Yeah.
I mean, they jump up in the air with their arms way up in the air.
Because they can.
They
bounce over with their legs completely straight and also.
Well, they're havoc.
I know. Yes. I mean, nobody just drops. Everybody, you know, does this great,
swallow dive.
Anyway, as I was saying, the doctor's changed into a black velvet jacket now, and he's got his dematerialization circuit, and he's obviously going to leave, but he's just waiting for the Brigadier to talk a bit of nonsense before doing so.
Back with the stunts.
Oh,
the particular stuntman who went down that entire... he had his entire fall down that one hill.
Yes.
He was so proud of that fall that he insisted that they show the entire fall.
Oh, that's good then, isn't it?
Also that scene was, I believe, their second day of filming or third scene of filming, and Katie Manning twisted her ankle for real.
Yeah.
And she thought she was going to be fired because of that.
Okay. So, like I say, the Doctor, the dematerialization circuit didn't work. He nicked it out the Master's TARDIS. But unfortunately,
excuse
I think the Master
moment.
Now has...
Tyler's calling.
I beg your pardon?
Be back in the mo.
What?
Tyler's calling.
Okay. So, meanwhile, the daffodils are being distributed by these strange characters in very big masks. Farrell is starting to resist the control of the Master, but not obviously not trying hard enough. And another pompous government official comes into another Doctor Who story for John Pertwee to have an argument with.
Master?
Whoa.
The idea of the daffodils being distributed came from around the same time there was a promotion from a laundry detergent.
A promotion from a what?
Excuse me?
What did you say? A promotion from a what?
Laundry detergent.
Oh, okay.
And that's where they got the idea. Or
no, okay.
What are we talking about laundry detergent for?
Because it's to do with the daffodils, and it reminded. Oh, never mind.
Oh, the soap. Yeah.
So the good Lord, who's that?
It's me.
Hello, me. So anyway, Joe goes to see Mrs. Farrell.
Who's, I thought me ran off with Clara.
Yeah.
Me is a player for Burnley, I believe, isn't he? Did he play for Burnley, Andy? Me? No? Anyway, so Joe goes to see Mrs. Farrell, who's getting over the death of her husband quite well, actually. She's bearing up quite nicely. Meanwhile, the doctor's having a new phone fitted with an extra long flex. And
he does like to walk.
That's a great scene where Yates says, see a pass. Oh, how many times do I have to show this? Pass.
Psychic paper.
Yes. Well done, Debbie.
Thank you.
There sound is too enthusiastic one about the bell returning. Yes.
There is. Oh, where'd you find the bell?
Under a pile of stuff.
Right.
Like I said, it was.
Anyway, the actor who plays the telephone repairman is a different height from Roger Delgado.
Oh, dear.
So how could it be the Master?
Does it matter?
Suspend your disbelief, Kirby.
Honestly. So, if I missed the funny scene in which Yates makes his coffee by using the Bunsen burner. Oh, that's right. No, this is this scene, isn't it?
Because this is before it.
Because they've got the doll that kills Farrell
Sr. They go
it's not coffee, it's cocoa.
All right, it's cocoa. God's sake.
Yeah, it's while they're going to see Mrs. Farrell that the telephone engineer turns up.
Yeah. And then we find out, obviously, it's the Master. But anyway, the very naughty old Yates, who obviously we find out later he's actually quite naughty. At the moment, he's conforming with his unit job, but he's not straighter than straight, is he? Otherwise, he wouldn't be making cups of cocoa with Bunsen burners. Meanwhile, the doll wakes up.
Oh, there must be some plot point coming later on in another story that I don't know about.
Oh, I thought Kirby would for sure be bringing up
Have you not watched Invasion of the Dinosaurs?
No, I have not watched Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
No. Anyway,
there was line flub there that I thought for sure Kirby would pick.
Yeah, I was trying to bring it up, but I wasn't being allowed in. Yes, the reason that I know that it was Coco is because John Pertwee would learn his lines absolutely off of the script, and what's the actor who plays Yates?
Richard Franklin, friend of the show.
Yeah, Richard
Frank.
He tried to improvise, and so they get off sync because the doctor responds about a tin of cocoa, and Yates does not mention a tin.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could just be misread by the audience that cocoa came in a tin anyway, so, you know.
Well, he just said, I tried to fix Coco, and then the doctor says, you had a tin of what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who. The doll gets shot to bits by the unit soldiers. So the Brig and the Doctor head off
There were three dolls, by the way, used in that scene. One was the little person who had actually been filmed the week before, and they didn't want to bring him back and pay him again, so they used the same footage, just CSO'd on a different background. And then they had the one that had been thrown into the back of the car, and then they had a third one that had explosives put in it.
Okay. I forgot to mention about the Brigadier and the Doctor breaking into a safe, and there's Norton in it. And the Doctor is saying they're very persistent,
that
aren't they?
That was unexpected.
And then there's the clue about the receipt for the or the invoice for the coach hire.
Yes. So that's right. And they're still confused about these daffodils. They're just still testing them and stuff and working out what the danger could be. Meanwhile, there's a phone call for the Doctor. And I just left them in. Oh, I just called to say goodbye. And then some more reverse filming, as you wanted to mention, reverse filming.
Afraid I cut your connection.
Yeah. I don't know if that was an ad-libbed line, because it really the Doctor was not impressed by it.
It seemed like it, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
You stole my thunder there, Brig. It felt like...
Is Andy still with us? I haven't heard from him.
Yes, I am. Oh. I'm still here.
He's listening. I'm getting a word in edgeways.
No, chatting away quite happily, and still here.
Good.
He's enjoying it.
Yeah. It's actually really interesting listening to what you just said,
So anyway, the Doctor...
Interesting. Andy said so.
Yes, thank you. The Doctor gets part of the molecular structure of the daffodil under the microscope, and we see the sort of nose and mouth thingy going on.
Oh, this is actually a piece I did enjoy. The face was quite interesting.
Yeah, it was very well done.
And you can see them trying to connect up the facts about, what's the face related to, and they finally get it there, don't they?
Yeah, I love that bit, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good piece.
Alan T. Butcher says, Coco, a bedtime drink. And then my mum joined. Hello, mummy. My mum is watching. So behave yourselves.
I thought Coco was a gorilla.
Sorry, Kirby. Did you say Adam's mum's a gorilla?
No, he said Coco's a gorilla. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. And, so the sort of daffodil comes to life, but when somebody switches on the radio, it's obviously triggered by...
it's only shortwave radio, isn't it? So that means... Because in those days, it was all medium wave, and Radio 2 was on long wave.
No, it was
so
a bit of FM, wasn't
it? Radio?
Yes, it was.
How did you notice that the radio that was being used in this scene was the same one that we first saw way back in The Invasion?
Maybe so. But anyway,
It's usually used by the Brigadier.
Yeah, but it triggers the daffodils into life, and Joe, obviously, being Joe, has to go take a closer look. And it fires a plastic sheet across the nose and mouth. It was quite good little effect, and quite scary, actually, I would have thought, for children.
But also, it's the dying breath. Now, how would it be the dying breath? Because it could have been any breath that could have dissolved it.
Yeah, that didn't make sense to me.
No, it was a plot hole there for me.
That was a bit silly, but they could have had a thing that maybe the plastic just decayed after 5 minutes, didn't necessarily need a dying breath to do, which of course you wouldn't have a dying breath, would you? Like you say, Andy, because your breath has been cut off by the plastic. So then we have the first proper scene with the Doctor and the Master facing off with each other. And what gets me with the Master is it happens quite a lot that the Doctor just says a couple of words and convinces the Master that the idea he has is really stupid and they should actually team up to... to defeat the baddie.
Yeah, that was a little silly.
Happen quite a lot from here on in.
Yeah, I was going to say, the old switcheroo.
Yeah. So the Doctor and Rose. The Doctor and Joe get caught and tied up yet again. And there's an airstrike that's going to happen, but of course Joe blabs it out that there's his airstrike, and the master takes them all to the sort of epicenter.
It's a really massively impressive airstrike. It's one aircraft, and that's it.
I think that's probably enough, though. So it takes
master,
them to,
master. The idea was to actually have this big battle of with ground troops, and they were running out of budget, so they decided to use the stock footage instead.
Yes, but as I say, if it had been one plane, that would have been enough.
I have a question about English, you know, the language.
Yes, it's nice to hear an American actually asking about how to speak English at long last. Yes, go on, Kirby.
At least I've always referred to the Royal Air Force as the RAF.
Yes.
And in this, they're calling it RAF.
Yes, RAF.
What does RAF spell, you silly man?
Yeah, what? Why
I know.
Not?
Yes.
How many times do you have to refer to the RAF? Whereas in England, they might refer to it a lot, you know.
Do
you normally say RAF, or do you say RAF?
Well, if you're going to mention it once, you say RAF. If you're going to mention it a lot, you're going to say RAF.
You know this. In football, we have the RAF, which is the Russian foul, didn't we?
Do we?
Yes, Russian Fowler in the late 90s.
Anyway, my mum says, sounds chaotic. I should obviously talk about the Doctor Who episode, not the podcast. Anyway, back to the episode.
Lady, your mum.
Kirby, it's usually referred to as RAF.
Yeah.
That was my question.
Okay, good.
Because quick answer, yes. When it comes up in conversation, which is not often, we say RAF.
Anyway, the Doctor and Master climb to the top of this radio telescope thing. The Doctor falls off and regenerates into Peter Davison. No, sorry, that's a future episode.
I was thinking that. Is it the same one they use?
Probably not.
I don't think so. You want me to find out?
No!
Go on, Kirk Doug.
And, yeah, this is the point in which the Master switched the big switch to bring the Nestine here in. The Doctor sort of says, well, it's not a very good idea, Master. Oh, no, it isn't, is it? Let's reverse the polarity.
And
of course, once the polarity is reversed, all the Nestine thingies drop down, and then the Master runs off and then puts his mask on top of Farrell. Farrell gets shot by Yates when they thought he was the Master, and
but the Doctor knew it wasn't.
Indeed.
Master?
Yes.
This radio telescope is Zouch's Farm Relay Station in Bedfordshire.
Right.
Bedfordshire.
Legopolis 1 is the Crowsley Park BBC Receiving Station in Berkshire.
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 Anyway, so basically at the end of the episode, the Doctor, so obviously the Master's got away, but the Doctor's actually quite pleased because he quite enjoyed his little spats with the Master. Now we finally get to the bits where we say what we thought about the story. This is great fun. I love it. What can I say? It's there's a few little minor, very minor, because it was filmed in the 1970s and they didn't have that much money, sort of Doctor Whoisms. No wobbly sets, but there's some silly bits you think.
There's a wobbly set.
Was this written by Robert Holmes?
Yes.
Yes. Well, yes. There we go. Brilliant. What did you think about it then, Andy?
I really enjoyed it. It's a very fast-paced, and a four-parter, because we've had not many four-parters recently, because of the Troughton then turning into Pertwee. We've had long stories. But it's very fast-paced, very quick, and, yeah, I think it's wonderful. And the Master is a cracking character, who the Doctor obviously... You know, you do wonder, what's his relationship with the Doctor and the Master? Is he brother? Is he...
Brothers.
Yeah, there is definitely some sort of sibling there.
Time Lord brothers, not necessarily
biological.
But it's
very fast-paced. It's very quick. And also, there's so much going on. And the way they bring the unit characters in, there's Bennington has a lot to do, Yates has a lot to do, the Brick has a lot to do. Yeah, love it. Really, very good story.
Yes, imagine if they could have actually stretched this one out to about six episodes. It still would have been great fun, mainly because obviously Roger Delgado's in it. So thank you, Andy. Right then, who should we go for next? Better go for Kirby next. Have you seen this one before, Kirby?
No, I have never before this past Monday evening. I had never seen this before. Mm-hmm. I've now seen it three times.
Why?
Because it's great.
Oh, okay.
I loved it. All three times, I've watched it straight through, all four episodes, just one after another, because it's just interesting. It holds your attention. It's got funny parts. It's got that wonderful performance by Roger Delgado.
That's what she said.
See, I've only seen Roger Delgado in the one with the Zaw.
The demons.
The demons. Yeah, that's the only story that I can think of.
Yeah, same here.
That I've seen him in, and this was, it was fun, and I may use this one just if I want to sit down and watch a third Doctor where I don't have to dedicate myself to episode after episode after episode after episode after episode. This is a nice one that I can sit down for a little less than 2 hours and have fun with.
Yes. Thank you very much. Debbie, had you seen it before?
No, I hadn't.
Okay, before you give me your comments, Ian Kirk says, the Doctor changed the polarity of the radio telescope to get rid of the Nestine consciousness. My spelling checker suggests Nestine should be Tennessee. So what did you think about it then, Debbie?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was brilliant. It was funny. It was silly. It was everything and more that Doctor Who should be. And the Master was absolutely amazing. And it just had everything in it that I love about Doctor Who and the silliness. And the Brig has always been one of my favourites. And I'm just falling for him all over again. And I really liked it. It was a good short story, lots of action, lots of interesting sciencey bits and, you know, wibbly wobbly timey wimey references type things, and it was just really good fun. But the one thing that really stood out as being didn't need to be in the story was the bit when the Time Lord turned up to tell him
that was the only
thing that I was like, eh?
Yes, if the Time Lords knew the Master was there, why didn't they just nip along and take him back to prison or wherever he needs to be.
Like Joseph Darley, isn't it? It's similar for that.
Yeah, he just turned up to basically go, ha-ha,
how come it's, you know, the Master's obviously, you know, they know where he is. They can catch him, like they did catch the Doctor in the War Games, because they know where he is. The Doctor was tried for, you know, interfering with, things. The Master going on killing people and stuff like that, yet they let it carry on, even though they knew where he was.
Well,
that bit doesn't make sense
to me. The way that they spoke about it that I felt was that, he's your problem now, Doctor. Well, it's what it felt like. Really did. Like, we wash our hands of the Master. He's an idiot. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But he's allowed to do it. He's allowed to. Because he kills people, he's allowed to get on with it.
Yeah. It's the only bit about it that just I didn't feel, you have to suspend your disbelief anyway. It's Doctor Who. But, you know, just it was just the bit that I was like, that didn't really scan right into the story. Yeah. You know, he's trying to open a door and then he has to stop and talk to this guy for a bit. And then we carry on with the story. It's like he sort of shrugs it off and goes, OK, carry on with the story.
Yeah. Of course, the interesting part of this episode, it is now the Doctor Who team that we're going to see over the next three series.
I watched half of this with Isla, and she absolutely loved it. She was really taken by the whole idea of the Autons and thought the Master was nice and creepy. And she really likes John Pertwee, so, hopefully she'll still be a fan in years to come.
Yeah. Right, everybody. Master? I think Master? We're not going to have it coming up because I'm being interrupted by Kirby.
Well, I thought of one other thing back with... Like I said earlier, the second time I watched this, I was watching with Fred. And one thing that is guaranteed to get her in here to watch a classic episode of story with me is if I tell her the Brigadier is in it.
Well, she's got 5 years of that to come up.
She loves the Brigadier, and this is one she'd never seen before either. Hmm. And she sat and watched the whole thing with me.
Good.
I'm actually a similar thing then, Kirby, because the Brigadier was one of my late uncle was an RAF squadron leader. and actually Wing Commander, and actually he very had a lot of similarity in appearance with the Brigadier. And when I was younger, growing up, sort of 5, 6, 7 years old, I'd watch Doctor Who and think, well, that's my uncle there, in the brig, he's my uncle. And it's wonderful the way, I think I appreciate what Fred does with you, is having that same relationship, is somebody who is a family member who I could relate to in Doctor Who.
Yes. Okay, everybody, here we go. Brace yourselves.
Oh, Mary.
It's Mary.
Well, it looks to me like we've entered the cartoon book era of Doctor Who.
Please.
I mean, gone are, you know, the subtle colorings, replaced by bright colors and the quippy, jokey, sarcastic dialogue. And to me, this looks like this is the beginning of the Roadrunner and Wile E. Old Coyote.
Oh. Please, no.
What I found amusing right off is I don't know what he thinks of his TARDIS, but there's always these huge explosions and lots of smoke coming out of the TARDIS, with him coming out, you know, looking, you know, a little shamefaced because he's done one thing or another that he's not supposed to. But he always leaves the door open, even when he's not there. They walk into that room and there's the TARDIS sitting there with the door standing open. And I think, well, golly, anybody at all curious could just swan in there, you know, and, you know, have a look around.
Mary, I did write that in my notes. TARDIS door open again.
Again, yeah, all open. And there are some things that just really don't make sense. The biggest one is, of course, you know, what we talked about earlier, the door, you know, that's booby-trapped, but the huge window next door, next to it, that, you know, he could go through the window and, you know, whatever. But you know, we already talked about that, so I won't go into it much longer. His new companion, Joe, oh, give me a break. I mean, Liz is gone, and obviously the line saying, you know, all you need, doctor, is someone to hand you test tubes and tell you how great you are, is I think, very apt. I mean, she was too mature for the series, and their attempts to, like, girly her up, you know, with her fluffy hair and her very short skirts and all that wasn't good enough for someone of her supposed intelligence. So now they bring in this cute little hapless little girl who, you know, she's got a cute smile. She's got big eyes. And all I can think of is we've moved into an era that is now going to be pitched for 8-year-olds for whom everything is colorful and obvious, including, you know, a girl that young boys can look to and fall in love with. Because Liz is too mature for all of that. And I think the Brigadier, he's become a bit like, is her name Scully in the, what is that series about aliens?
Oh, the X-Files.
Yeah, we're the always X-Factor. In denial, always forgetting, you know, that, I mean, the Autons were a part of the Brig's life just a few episodes ago, and already it's like, what, plastics? Oh my goodness! And you know, it's like somebody wiped the Brigadier's mind.
Yes.
And we're going to see more of this as the thing goes along, because he's always standing there, arms akimbo, going, "What, really, Doctor?" Yeah. And you were talking about how this could go on to more episodes. I don't know. I think the entire fourth episode of this could have been dispensed with because for one reason, why are we delaying the RAF from bombing that bus? I mean, what is so precious about that bus with all those Autons on it that the doctor feels like everything needs to be delayed for? All it did was cause them more trouble, which then to me means they had to stretch the story out some more. When they could have tied things up at the end of the third episode. What else do I want to say? Oh, yeah. And then as you say, that miraculous last minute conversion of the master, you know, who he's been fighting all along. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you know what? That is a good idea. Let's join together and get rid of the Nestine intelligence. You know, seemed very fake, you know, not at all believable. And I understand that they redid the ending, that closing line of the doctors saying, oh, you know, but I'm looking forward to, you know, running into him again. I think the original script had him saying, you know, well, one of us is going to die, either the master or me. And I guess after they watched it, they decided that was a, kind of a scary ending. So they taped it with him saying what he says now. So I am not looking forward to the next three seasons because this is just going to be the same thing over and over and over again with mostly with Joe Grant, who I really don't like. So there you have it.
Stick with it, Mary. Stick with it.
Well, you've got to blame stick with it. There's a lot of episodes to get through.
Stay with it, really, Barry.
This has never been my favorite Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe it.
Man, actually, last season, I thought, oh, well, this is okay. You know, I can do with this. But I know going forward from here that it's going to be stuff I'm not that fond of.
It's not always going to be.
I love Pertwee. He's my best Doctor ever.
Mary, have you seen much of John Pertwee?
No, I haven't.
Well, there you go. Then you can't predict what you're going to think of forthcoming stories, because you might like stuff that we don't like that much. So wait and see what happens.
That's usually what happens, Adam.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, right then. Let's move on to feedback.
Master?
No one feedback now, Kirby. Well, go on then.
I was just looking at the list of Pertwee stories.
Share. And stop looking on other pictures. You lose your connection. Mm.
I was just looking at the list of Pertwee stories, and there is another master one besides the demons that I have seen, because we watched it and we had Claws of Axos.
Okay, we've got most of that. Something about the Claws of Axos, but never mind. Right then. Lavazzi have sent in a message that says, we are giving 10% off our collection of Doctor Who products starting today. That's...
Hooray!
Well, it's today.
Yay.
Wow. No, 2 days ago. Second somebody sent me this. Right, so 10% off our collection of Doctor Who products starting today. Fans can use the code WHO10... 10, so WHO10 during checkout and save 10% on total order value. It will be great if you can share this information with your readers on your blog / social media. I think it's a generic thing that he sent people out, but yes. So if you want to save some money at Lavazzi, 10% off if you use the offer code WHO10. Okay, and it ends on the 19th of December. You heard it here first, everybody. Get your 10% off your Doctor Who scarves, etc.
Yeah, do it. Do it, folks. And
specifically nice, the Christmas hats that Debbie hasn't bought me yet. Right then, moving on, more feedback. We have Ian Kirk, who, when we have Ian Kirk on, we normally do this. Oh, bugger.
Hello, Tootsie Mugbutt Podcast, this is Ian Kirk. My mother sometimes translated French books into English. So did John Pertwee. Once she was returning a book he had translated to the library. The librarian asked her what she thought of it, and she said the translation was not very good. When she turned round, Pertwee was standing behind her.
Ooh.
This is a story after Inferno. When we first see the Doctor, he is singing, I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire. Another trim phone, this time lethal. There's also a man-eating chair.
Mm. Yum,
next
yum.
To playing the silent yep. strongman was previously Toberman in the Tomb of the Cybermen.
I said that.
No, you didn't. I said it.
Feature Roger Delgado as the master. The first of many. They had a quarry representing a quarry instead of an alien planet.
Yes.
This type of low-budget action story set on Earth do not appeal to me, and I do not have much to say about them.
Oh.
Some people say Class is like Torchwood.
I haven't seen it.
I say it is like Mork and Mindy, if both Mork right. and Mindy were aliens. Bye for now.
Thank you very much, Ian. That's Ian Kirk,
I've liked Class, but I haven't seen the last two episodes.
I have only seen one episode.
I've not seen the last one yet.
I don't feel inclined to watch any more at the moment until I'm really, really bored.
Right. Yeah, me too.
I've read reviews of the last one. I think everyone's saying that's it. It's finished.
Okay.
It's going to be, yeah, classes are like, yeah.
Well, Nicole Mazza's watched it all, and she said that the finale was very good.
I'm sure it was. I'm not going to watch it at all. I'll just be waiting until I've got time, and I'm really, really bored. At the moment, I've got other things to do.
And you're not really, really bored?
I can only just fit Doctor Who into my busy schedule. And I haven't even got a wedding on at the moment, so that shows how busy I am. Right there, next bit of feedback is going to be forwarded to Mrs. Deborah Melrose.
Even though
I read it superbly last week, I can't be bothered to read it. So,
it's Mr. Butcher.
Right, where is he? Sorry,
What I don't understand is why they keep switching quarries. They only use this particular quarry once for, and there's a quarry down the street that they used for the Macro Terror.
Maybe all the quarries people wanted to have a go.
I wasn't aware that Alan T. Butcher was changing quarries. Actually, you're really confusing me at the moment.
There's some really good pubs in Guildford in Quarry Street. That's probably going to change it.
Anyway.
Andy, did you ever post the picture you took of the transmitting station there in Guildford?
No, I haven't done that yet. I must do that. Yes, you're quite right, Kirby. I must get around to doing that.
Shut up! Right. Debbie, you have some something to read out.
Your plastic pal that's fun to kill with, or the master of acid. Dear 20 megabyters, you may well be thinking that the story is an obvious parable and cautionary tale against our social overdependence on hydrocarbons. You would in fact be wrong. There may be some merit to this proposition, but the fundamentals of this story strike at the very hearts of our hero. Terror of the Autons is, of course, a closely studied interpretation of dissociative identity disorder. In his struggle to emerge from what the Time Lords have done to him, it is clear that here the Master is the Doctor set free of his problems and restraints by an act of pure imagination. The revival of the monsters from the Third Doctor's first moments stuck on Earth suggests a yearning to restart his time by the agency of his alter ego, the Master. The Doctor's contempt for his own weakness in being confined is demonstrated by the Master's life-threatening traps throughout the tale. The Doctor's defeat of these traps by his own ingenuity or by the help from those he has become associated with in his unit community are signs of his own self-confidence returning. Only by appreciating the Doctor-Master crisis of identity does the conclusion of the story make sense. The Master, having worked so hard to advance the Nestine manoeuvres to fruition, takes barely half a line of argument to perform a circumpolar... Oh, my God.
Go on, Debbie, you can do it.
Tergiversation. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. He helps the Doctor deflect the invasion as a matter of self-perpetuation now that the two personalities have been brought within the same locus. We then end with the Master at large set to play again, and the Doctor contemplates the prospect of playing with himself with unalloyed alacrity.
Playing with himself, huh?
I knew you'd pick up on that one there.
That's what she said.
Honestly, alacrity. Yeah, it's me reading too far ahead. We also learned that Osgood from TMAC Control in the 21st century started out in the plastics industry under the name of McDermott. Not really killed by the Master's blow-up chair, he was presumably resettled under the famous unit Osgood Witness Protection Scheme in the 1970s, or was that the 1980s? All in all, the Terror of the Autons is a welcome return to Doctor Who after a year off, as Dr. Quatermass took over in the aftermath of a traumatic regeneration caused by the execution of the Second Doctor. The arrival of the core unit family is complete, and the fantastic Let's Stick storytelling gestalt is up to full speed. Next up, the Doctors Keller and Who clash over the mastery of a Clockwork Orange. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher. Sorry, Alan, I still mess it up.
I do enjoy
those moments.
He must
sit up late at night thinking of a way to tongue-tie you.
Yeah, he must like tongue-tying me.
Yes. Got some more feedback.
Hi, 20 Megabyte Podcasters. This is Paul Gavell with my review for The Spray of Death. An enjoyable tale to introduce the Doctor's nemesis. I grew up with Anthony Ainley as my master, but Roger Delgado is just outstanding in ways that Ainley never was, unfortunately. Pertwee's googly eyes make a return in the Part 3 cliffhanger. I think Jo is played perfectly here, and I feel as like the Doctor seems to that she is going to be an annoyance, but grows to like her over the course of the story. Great stuff overall. Next, the Mind of Evil.
yesterday.
Thank you, Paul. That's about it, I think. I thought that Billy Kirkbright was going to send
feedback. He said he had said something, yes.
Mm-hmm. In regards to this particular story. Because he said he thought that that's what we had next, but I haven't got anything from Billy.
No, he said he sent some stuff in.
How you doing? Okay, Power of the Autons. I thought this was a great story, actually. I really did. I think more so, in my opinion, that it was Casey Manning's and Roger Delgado's debut as their characters. And what an entrance for Mr. Delgado. What an absolute fantastic entrance. You know, in my opinion, it's often said that in this era of Doctor Who, that the overuse of the Master is its downfall in this era. But I beg to differ. It's because of that that I actually find this era of Doctor Who absolutely fantastic. I really do. You know, two Earthbound Time Lords on Earth and so on. And brilliant stuff. In fact, I'll go as far as saying that if I was to say that there was what's the best era, in my opinion, of Doctor Who, I'd have a toss-up between this one and the Hinchcliffe era. Yeah, I really would. But I love the rapport between the Delgado Master and the Third Doctor. You know, there was a mix of arch-enemy aspect as well as the from the Doctor's aspect, a deep-seated affection for the Master, which becomes evident in the Sea Devils when he visits him in prison. And I think it was the case here as well, particularly on the end of the story when he said, oh, he'll be back. And I think there was some aspect there of him looking forward to that. Or that's how I saw it anyway. So, yeah, brilliant story. You know, the Master himself was suave, he was sophisticated, he was calm, you know, he was eloquent and all the rest of it, but he was also downright evil as well and ruthless. You know, I think, in my opinion, Delgado was the ultimate Master. He really was. I think probably second to that, would be John Sims, but that's another story. But great story, a couple of great iconic moments, of course, with the plastic chair swallowing the, I forgot the guy's name, the character there, but and also the troll doll. Didn't that look absolutely ridiculous, stupid, to the point of being silly? Yet at the same time, it was quite frightening too. You know, I think, wasn't that what Mary Whitehead was going on about? She'd have had a field day, surely. But yeah, great iconic moments. I thought of the two stories between the Autumn stories of the Pertwee era. I think this one tops it. Yeah, so great stuff. In fact, I've seen this story many times, and I watched it again a couple of weeks ago when I thought you was gonna review it back then, but I was out of sync. I watched it there and I didn't fall asleep, and that's watching it all the way through. So that must say something. But yeah, brilliant story, okay? And that's my lot. Have a great day.
No, I haven't had anything. Oh, well, Billy, sorry. Feel free to send it in again and we'll put it on a future episode. Right then. Anybody want to do any quizzing? No? Oh, that's a bit of a...
But we took it as read that we were gay in quiz.
Oh, good.
Yes.
If that's the case, it's now time for this week's edition at last, after the people who can be bothered to be on the show are now back. Of You Won't Get This One.
Fun in size, too.
Struggling to find something to write the scores on. Appropriate piece of paper. Yeah, one.
Any Why don't you use your iPad or something?
Because I can't use the iPad. That's in the other room. Good grief. Hang on. A piece of paper. Hey, here we are. A piece of paper.
Oh. Technology, right. Wonderful stuff.
Okay, right then. Let's see if we can't. Andy spoke last, so he can go first.
Okay.
Debbie's here, so she can go second. Mary sort of turned up, so she can go third. Kirby is here. And me. Okay. And don't ask me what the subject matter of the questions is, because we're so many weeks behind, it's ridiculous.
I was guessing Tell the Autons.
Well, that'll be one of the stories that you lot missed. I didn't miss any of them, as a point out.
Well, I've only got the notes from this one, so I'm going to...
Well, that's a shame, isn't it, Deb?
Yeah, I've only got notes on this one.
Well, that's a shame, isn't it, Mary?
I did Inferno.
That's a shame, isn't it?
I was there for Inferno.
There you go, it's a burp for you.
When was the last quiz?
Stop going share.
Are we doing this at Inferno and are the Autons or further back?
Can we just do the Autons?
I have spent hours compiling questions for quizzes. And all you lot can say, after I spent hours compiling questions on said quizzes, is can we just do Autons, because you lot have got notes on it. I'm sorry.
What are we doing there, Adam?
Well, I'm going to throw in some questions from previous episodes that you should have watched.
Oh, Jesus.
Right then, who do you think, Andy, is going to win?
Well, in that case, it's got to be you, because you're going to mess us up so much. You.
Debbie, who do you think is going to win?
Well, I'm going to pick you.
Yeah. Okay. Mary, who do you think is going to win?
You.
Kirby, who do you think is going to win?
Debbie.
Ooh.
And I think that Smarty Pants Melrose will win.
Yes, so, but my memory is all written on paper.
Your memories are what?
Somewhere. Your memory, not my memory.
Bloody American Express.
Right, I'm trying to work out whether we've done this story, because I can't even... All right, did we do Ambassadors of Death? Hello, anybody there?
Yes.
Was everybody present?
Yeah, did we have a quiz for it?
No,
I don't know.
We didn't have a quiz. No,
we didn't have a quiz? Well, that's good. Why didn't we have a quiz?
Because it was just me and Andy.
Okay, here we go then. What correction to port was needed at the beginning of the story?
Yes, Joker 1 degree.
Joker 1 degree, eh? What is that?
Yep.
That's good. That's 4 points to me. And bye
was
bye,
it
Joker.
5 degrees.
Beg your pardon?
Was it 5 degrees?
Another. Hang on. That's another 2 points to me, isn't it? I'm already 6 points ahead. I'm doing really well here.
Okay. I didn't play a joker.
No, but you had a... Oh, yes, only 1 point to me now. I'll deduct a point. There we go. Okay, next question goes to Debbie.
So what was the answer?
Oh, it was 2 seconds. That was a correction to port needed. 2 second correction to port. Okay, next question goes to Debbie. How long has the Mars probe been out of contact?
Oh, God, I can't remember. Was it...
I think I know.
7 months.
It's irritating when she makes out she doesn't know the blimmin' answer.
My notebook is somewhere. I don't know where.
Go fetch it.
I don't know where.
Mary. Mary. Don't give up, Mary.
Is she here?
Sorry, I had my microphone off. I had
that. Right then, Mary.
Yes.
What was the Doctor trying to fix on the TARDIS console?
Oh, God. Where the hell are my notes?
I remember him playing with the console. I don't remember.
That's the point I lost them earlier. Anybody? It's all gone quiet. Another point to me. Right, then. So the answer was time vector generator. Too late. Right, then. Next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
What was Cornish's first name?
Oh, I know.
Ralph?
Yes.
I should have jokered. Oh, well. Okay. I wasn't quite sure.
All right, okay. Andy.
Okay.
Still with Ambassadors of Death. How many clamps were on the recovery hatch?
What is...
There we go. No,
three.
I've already done the did deer. No, it wasn't three. No. But it's point for me. Oh, another point for me. Excellent. Thank you.
Well, how many was it then?
It was four.
Yeah, I would have guessed four. Yeah.
Deborah.
Yes.
How long was Recovery 8 scheduled to launch?
I think I remember.
Recovery 8?
Yes.
Recovery 8, yes.
Yeah.
It was having problems with its fuel injection, wasn't it? I don't know.
Yes, it was.
10 days.
After all that.
Hey, Kirby. 3 months.
Whoa.
Cool.
Okay, right then. Mary.
Yes.
What was triggered just before they left the warehouse?
I know.
Let's see. Just before they left the warehouse.
I know.
I don't know.
Oh, there we go. Kirby?
Trigger the self-destructor!
And Kirby?
Pasta.
What was reported from Athens Observatory?
A solar flare pulled up. Joker!
Well, there are loads of other questions from Ambassadors of Death. We'll move on to the next story that you lot can be bothered to hang around for. That was 61, so we're up 62. Oh, bugger, where's open?
Would that be Inferno?
Oh, well, I guess so. It's the next one in order. Right, okay, next question, Andy. It's an Inferno question. Andy.
Okay.
Oh, there we are.
Yep.
Which output pipe was taken
number
out
number two of... output pipe.
You all right, Andy?
Yeah, fine, yeah.
It's got all sound
weary.
It's got all croaky.
Yeah, a bit tired. That's it. It's been a long day, and Zach's Stormy's, we've had problems with Stormy. He's not been good today.
Been leaking out of both ends, hasn't he, bless
oh,
himself.
Oh, God. Yes. Thursday night was, my life. Thursday night was unbelievable. But no, he's not been good today.
Oh, bless him.
Aww.
My sympathies. Anyway, Andy. Oh, sorry, no. Debbie.
Yes.
What did Starman say Sir Keith could run if he stays away from drilling?
I think I know.
I don't know. Ooh. I just remember it being grumpy.
I'll have to sample that, Debbie, saying I don't know to something. Right, Andy, you said you knew.
Those are kitchens.
I'm going to give you that one. There's a canteen. Yes, I'll give you that one. Okay, Mary.
Yes.
Where did Sutton fly in from?
I don't know.
Ooh. Well, I think I know.
And Andy. I'm sorry. Yeah,
Andy. Abu Dhabi.
Oh, should I give him that? It's Kuwait was the answer. Up to Kirby. Kuwait. Has Kuwait got anything to do with Abu Dhabi?
Not really.
Okay. So therefore.
No, it was Kuwait is the answer.
It's Far East, though.
Yeah. It's wrong.
Somewhere in the Far East.
Yes. It's not a very big place at all, is it? No, right then. Mary. Mary.
Already?
Hey?
No, we just said it's my turn now.
Okay. Yeah. Kirby.
Yes.
Kirby, all right. What did Petra what did Petra tell Sutton she wasn't?
I think I know.
It's like a...
A what?
A secretary or something.
Oh, I think he said secretary or something, listeners.
He did say secretary.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you that, even though the actual answer was typist. That's near enough.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
You do sound weary.
He does sound very weary. Bless him.
No, it's been a long day. He really has.
He needs to take a nap.
Don't worry, I won't put you through this for much longer. If you can stay awake for the rest of the quiz, that'd be great. Right then, Andy?
Yep.
What was Starman's first name?
Eric.
Sorry,
damn. Should have got that one.
The bell sounded rather like you did then. Right, hang on. There we go. Right, Deb.
Yeah?
What can Starman make no allowances for?
I know.
God damn it, I need my notes. Change?
Kirby?
Incompetence.
Yeah, that's me tonight.
Rather, well, Kirby's demonstrating incompetence by not playing as Joker at the moment, but there you go. Mary.
You don't play a Joker for an I know when someone else.
No, but then you have other opportunities to have played it.
Yes,
Mary.
No, I'm sorry.
Yes.
You won't get this one. Who shot the first monster through the heart?
I don't know.
All right, anybody?
Rig.
The answer was Wyatt. Kirby.
Master.
What year did Krakatoa erupt, according to the Doctor?
I know.
Joker.
Ooh.
1883.
1983? I don't think so. I think we might have noticed.
I said 18.
You said Badoo-ka-doo. I'm sorry, Badoo-ka-doo is not the correct answer.
No, he said 1883. He got it right.
I didn't hear him say that. Did anybody hear him say 1883?
He got it right.
Why would I say 19? That wouldn't make sense.
I was taking the mickey out of your terrible blooming internet connection.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, he got it right.
Yes, he got it right. Yes, well done, Kirby. All right, well, we'll move on to another set of questions, even though only about a quarter of the way through hours of quiz compilations, thanks to you lot, can be bothered to show up for blimmin' episodes.
Sorry.
I made it to that one.
So what are we on to now? We're on to terror now, are we?
Yeah.
Right, now... We're on the next story. Oh, here we are.
God, we're never going to hear the end of it, are we, honestly?
Yeah.
Terror of the Autons.
It holds over us for a long time.
Okay, right. Tune your minds in to Terror of the Autons. We may come back to those questions at a later date. Okay. Andy.
Yep.
What did Luigi first say to the Master?
I know.
Oh,
I know too.
Who the hell are you?
Near enough.
It's Heck.
It's Heck,
but it's near enough. Mm. Right, next question goes to Deb.
Yep.
What song did the Doctor sing at the beginning of the story?
We all know.
I don't actually know what it's called.
I know.
What he says is what it's called.
Yeah, what he said. Exactly.
No.
Good point for me. So who said I know? Andy said I know on that one, I think. Go on, Andy.
I don't want to set the world on fire.
I know you don't, but what's the answer to the question?
I don't always listen to him singing in the thing. Everybody else usually gets the singing questions.
Right. Mary.
Yes?
Who created more smoke than fire? Sorry. What creates, I beg your pardon, more smoke than fire?
I think I know.
Micro welding?
Oh, I'm going to give you that one.
In particular, it's steady state.
Yeah, that was the
steady
answer.
State micro welding.
I think that's good enough for 2 points. Kirby.
Master.
What branch of the ministry looked after the Beacon Hill Research Establishment?
Technology.
Another chance of... Oh, you used it.
Which,
sorry.
By the way, I used my joker.
Yes, all right.
I can use it again. But master.
Yes.
The Minister of Technology was... they disbanded between the time it filmed and the time it was broadcast.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm cutting you off there so as you don't sound any more share... For another couple of minutes.
What I suspect is that someone's not paying attention
to
my...
Yes, Master, I'm ready. Yes, Master.
Right, Andy, here we go. Who did the Master first kill?
I know.
Gooch.
Look, what's the matter with this bell? There we go. Deborah.
Yes.
Where did Liz Shaw go?
Joker.
Oh, she's playing a Joker.
She back knows.
To Cambridge. Yes.
Pardon?
Back to Cambridge.
Now I'm going to get the harp one.
That's what she said. The old catchphrase has never died. Mary.
Yes.
In quotes, "the director is expecting you, sir," was whose first line?
That's an easy one.
It's not easy for me. I don't do a lot of quotes. I don't know.
Right then, Mayor Kirby, you say you seem to know the answer.
It was his first line in the entire for everything. Gates.
I think we just about got out of that garbled piece of
Yates.
Electronicness. Yates.
Can you, Master? I'm going to see.
For God's sake.
I am going to go see who is streaming. Obviously, someone is.
Although it sounds like he's doing this.
So I will.
Who's streaming? I'm going to see who is streaming. Right, are we on to Andy's question?
Yes, sir, I think so, yes.
Right, Andy, what did I go up to? Hang on, it was like Mike Gates, it was Mary's question, then it was... Oh, no, that's actually Kirby's question next. Oh, that's a pain.
I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Front sides, too.
No one's streaming, so I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, well, they said they weren't, but you're better, so they must have.
They quickly closed it. Their computer.
Right then, God help us, it's Kirby's question. What word did
Master?
The... I should have actually had the answer to one of these questions as master, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Right. God, right, what word did the doctor use to describe the master?
I don't know.
Jackanapes.
Damn.
Andy.
That was going to be one of my quotes, you see.
What was the master's weakness, according to the doctor?
He's an unimaginative plotter.
No, that's a description. It's not his weakness. What are they doing?
I know.
Go on, then.
Vanity.
Debbie.
Yes.
Who did Joe punch in the, shall we say, stomach?
I thought it was Yates.
You thought it was Yates, did you?
Yeah. It was
I
Yates.
Was rather busy laughing, to be perfectly honest.
Right, Mary.
And we got to see it twice too.
Yeah.
Mary, who did Joe suffer from? Can I say that again? What did Joe suffer from after the bomb exploded?
Oh God, I think it's one of two things.
Bomb exploded. I don't know.
I'm doing well here. Debbie said I know.
Post-hypnotic alienation.
Smarty Bounce Melrose is back, everyone. Kirby.
Are you going to give us a score update? We haven't even got a score update yet.
Well, you've kept
my
me on the
weakness deal. Is my notes.
Right, hang on. Whose question was that last one?
That was mine.
Right, so, Kirby.
Master.
Where was the circus?
In the ring.
No, I meant what town was it in?
I know.
It's in the town. What town was it? It's the circus in Kirby. That's the question I'm trying to get at you.
I don't know.
You don't know. Go on then. Debbie, what's the little answer?
Tarminster.
Okay, right. The quiz scores then, as requested by Kirby. In the last place, we're at the Norman Pines. God knows how. And in the lead with 22 points is me.
Thank you, Adam.
Right. The next question goes to Andy.
Okay.
Which brother's circus was it?
I know.
Rossini Brothers.
Yay.
What's the matter with my bell? I'm not dinging
ring.
Properly.
You can ring my
Let's
bell.
Let's try that again. There we go.
Actually, the Roberts Brothers, but...
Don't be so bloody.
It was the Roberts Brothers. I went to Bobby Roberts Circus. It was in Blackpool many years ago, and I got a shot of Alicia sat on an elephant at that particular circus. Anyway, Debbie.
What a bit of abuse that is.
What? Yeah. Debbie.
Yes.
Who did Joe see enter the Master's TARDIS?
Professor Phillips.
Mary.
Yes.
What were John's last words? That's the old bloke. John, no, the dad of Farrell. John Farrell, in fact. What were his last words?
Like I said, I don't do quotes very much.
Oh, dear.
So I don't know.
I thought somebody should have gone, but never mind. Anybody?
No idea, but I thought it was something along the lines of,
Yeah.
If nobody knows, it's...
It's beyond me.
Oh, well, is it? Well, that's a shame.
Yes, it is.
Is the correct answer. Right. Right, so next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
PDF 610G was a number plate of which car?
I don't know.
I think I know.
Okay, facts for Kirby and a point for me. Go on
in,
Andy.
It's the Austin Maxi the Brigadier was driving in.
That's the correct answer. Well, every time I try and ding it for Andy, it goes wrong. Let's try again. That's better.
Austin Maxi, what an awful car that was.
Next question goes to Andy.
Yep.
Who was Who was Brown Rose's boss?
Old Tubby Rollins.
Lord Rollins to you.
Debbie.
Yeah. Yes.
Who was referred to as a Dolly Scotsman? Clues in the question.
It was Mr. Campbell, scientific supplies guy.
Well done. Mary.
Now, this will be your point again, Adam.
Now, as this is probably your last question, I would suggest it might be a good idea playing the Joker.
That's if I had know the answer.
But if she plays a Joker and when she doesn't know it, then you get more points.
And if she doesn't play the Joker, I will get the points anyway. So either way, right.
But you would get double points.
How many seat a coach did Farrell order?
I know.
I didn't hear the end of the question.
Many seat a coach did Farrell order?
I know.
How do I?
Oh, I don't know.
And I do too.
Okay, therefore that's 4 points and 2 points to
and
me.
I've got some trivia about it too.
Going in, who said I know first? It was Andy, wasn't it?
Andy did.
15.
Great answer,
Master.
Yes.
In the initial planning, it was going to be a 20-seater. Okay. That was in the info text. I don't know why.
That's Kirby. That is so sad. It's
Right, next question goes to Kirby, I think.
Okay. Master?
Yeah. Kirby. What rank did the doctor accidentally call Yates?
I know.
Well, I don't.
Oh, excellent. I think I've deserved to win this one, although I'm not going to. Debbie?
Sergeant.
Oh, my bell's playing up. There we go. Here's the correct answer. I think it was Miss Red Line, wasn't it? But they left it in.
I think so, yes.
Right. Free for all questions. That means anybody can answer them as long as they shout out that they know it first. The first one is how many daffodils were distributed?
I know.
Go on in, Andy.
And they 450,000.
Ding.
Ding.
And the last question is, what did Benton say to cancel the air attack?
Eagle, abort, abort, abort.
Oh, yes, brilliant. Well done, Debbie.
Right, so far we have some scores. It's going to take me a while to work out. So just bear me a second.
That's why you should computerize it.
All I'm going to say is, Mary, don't feel too disconsolate. Okay?
Right. I always lose.
Aww. No, you don't always
That's
lose.
That's not
you
entirely true, is it?
Several times.
Right, so at the moment, the scores are in last place with 2 points, Mary.
Yay!
In third place with 17 points is Debbie.
Yay!
In second, hang on, that's fourth place, sorry. In fourth place, third place with 18 points, it's Andy. In second place with 20 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 26 points, it's me. Ooh. And quite likely so, because you lot couldn't be bothered to turn up for various episodes while I was spending all this time compiling questions for the quiz. But Andy predicted me.
We have no respect for you, Adam.
No. Andy predicted me. Debbie predicted me. Mathematics. Mary predicted me.
That gives me 4 points.
Kirby predicted Debbie. And I predicted Debbie. So, unfortunately, and quite unfairly in my view, the final scores are: in last place with 4 points, it's Mary.
Oh.
In fourth place with 20 points, it's Kirby. In third place with 26 points, it's me. In second place with 34 points, it's Debbie. But the winner this week, and quite rightly so, apart from the fact I should have won, it's Andy.
Yeah, get in, my son.
Wow. Well done.
You weren't for hanging in there.
Well done.
I gave you.
Hey, but Andy, I'm afraid there's no scarf in it for you.
No, well, you never know. One day, maybe.
Yes. Someday.
One day. I shall be back.
I knew he was going to say that. Yes, Amory Brackle has just joined the viewership of the live feed of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join and probably haven't been bothered to because we haven't had that many new members recently, apart from a few people trying to join for spamming reasons.
Yes, we've had a few of them.
Doctor Who news has not changed since last week. What's going on?
No, there's been nothing, has there?
There's a poster published for the Return of Doctor Mysterio, which is on in a couple of weeks' time, everyone.
Yeah, it will be, will it?
It's not saying there's nothing on it.
Hey?
Yeah, it's just the same as last week, because at least I read the Doctor Who news, and I wasn't...
They've got broadcast times. It's going to be on at 5:45 on Christmas Day in the United Kingdom.
For us, it's not on until 9 in the evening for us.
No.
I'm actually going to watch it at home. We're having our first Christmas at home. We're just going to go for breakfast with the family. We're actually having a meal at home. And I can actually sit down and watch Doctor Who at the time it's aired for the first time in years.
Excellent.
Okay, so when are we broadcasting next then, folks?
Hang on. Well, you're treating
me
well.
So
you're going. I beg your pardon. We established this last time, didn't we? I can't do next Sunday because I'm at the Christmas party. The following Sunday, I'm doing a trip to Her Majesty's Theatre in the West End of London, because that's where Isabella's dancing.
Yeah, they're dancing, aren't they?
So the only real possibility is to look at the possibility, I've already said possibility in the same sentence twice, now three times, is to do it on Monday, the 12th of December.
Right, I can do Monday.
I can't.
Debbie...
is key holder on Mondays now.
Well, stop being key holder. I'm stopping being a key holder. anyway, yeah, so that's...
Yeah, we already established that. It's already on my calendar.
Yeah, so on my calendar too.
We were going to do
for
it
for the people that could be
Monday
bothered to turn up for the show, will know already that we'd already decided we were going to do it on the 12th of December. But other people obviously couldn't be bothered to come.
I can do it then, definitely.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Andy.
So what about Mary? Mary, can you?
Well, I'll see. You know, it's one of those Uber in the morning.
Mary. Yeah. Mary.
Yes.
It wouldn't be the same without you.
He doesn't say that about me.
It's working.
Yeah. All right. So that's it then. No, it's not, because Andy was some.
Yeah. The next day after that, my the geek daughter, Julia, she heads to Sydney, Australia.
Does she?
Wow. Oh. Lovely place.
Does she be to get that Pokemon that only Australians can catch?
Yeah, she says she's not going to install the Pokemon Go, and
get her to take your account with her.
There's some amazing Pokemon out there.
Excuse me. To take your account with her, then you can have them on your account.
Ah.
Ah.
That's a good idea.
Yes, it is.
Ah. Aha.
Australian Pokemon.
Yeah. All right then.
She's taking a 3-week class for her university. So.
Back for Crimble.
She's gonna be spending Christmas in Australia where it's hot.
We did that 6 years ago. Went out at the cricket.
Tell her to meet Reese and Robert while being out there. Anyway, right.
She's not gonna be. I don't think she's gonna. Well, first of all, she's not gonna be on the west side.
Well, surely it's only a couple of yards away from Reese's house.
Opposite sides of the island.
Well, surely that's not very far. It's just a stone's throw.
Robert's in the west, and Robert's in the east.
I'm not being funny, but I'm in the north side of the Albert and Moore Green block over there, and Deb's in the south part of that particular block. But we can still go and see each other within about 30 seconds.
Yeah, because an island is an island. Yeah.
we actually met with Robert. We were there 3 years ago. Went and had dinner with Robert and Jocelyn. Lovely couple. They really are. Really nice couple.
Anyway,
what's really funny is when she gets back 3 weeks later, she's going to be leaving before. She's going to arrive before she leaves.
Yes.
Yeah, because of time, I guess.
Anyway, as I was trying to say, whoone.co.uk have some products coming up.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
They've got a book, Daleks, by David Whittaker, another book, Zabi, by Bill Strutton, and another book, Crusaders, Zabi! By David Whittaker, and another book, Space Pirates, by Terence Dix. I know which ones of those are more interesting than others.
That's not a book, that's a disc.
Oh, right, smarty pants. Yes, a disc. It's a CD, in fact. And DWM 506, as I said, if you want to buy in America, get it quickly, buy it from whoone.co.uk. And yeah. It's got
they've got Crusaders
of
there
the
on the
Second
book, and I'd like that.
On the cover. And, of course, the single duvet set, which I would never be allowed to have in the house, is also available along with the double
duvet. They've got
set.
To do a king size duvet cover, then I could legitimately have one.
You wouldn't be allowed to have one.
I would be allowed to have one.
Would you? No. Okay, there's lots of pre-order items on the agenda. We've got the Revelli Conspiracy, Sontarans, Absolute Power, Cold Fusion, all Big Finish Productions, starring Hartnell. Well, it's not Hartnell, he's dead, isn't he? It's featuring the first Doctor.
Your
boy's getting better.
The sixth Doctor and the fifth Doctor, I believe. No one, difficult to tell. And Highgate Horror.
Isn't there a new one out with Mary's boyfriend in it?
Probably. New Countermeasures One.
Not currently.
Out of Order of the Daleks, which is a sixth Doctor story.
Original they've Sin, novelized Pirate Planet?
Seventh Doctor story, hey?
Yes.
All right.
It can't be legitimate. Oh, the Pirate Planet. Oh, that's the. Okay. Yes, they've novelized the Pirate Planet.
The Power of the Daleks.
James Goss, in fact, has novelized it. There's also Outbreak, which is a Torchwood story coming out. So also on pre-order, the TARDIS Bowl. I'm surprised that's still on pre-order, because Deb wants one. Third Doctor Adventures 2, Umbrella, the TARDIS Umbrella, which would be quite apt in the current climate, although it'd be more apt to actually get more scarves to wear, because it's absolutely really cold.
Oh, I love it. It's cold enough to wear my TARDIS scarf again.
Unit Silenced is a CD about...
Unit?
No, it's about the current unit, as run by Kate Stewart, and War Doctor 3 Agents of Chaos, which is a Big Finish story featuring John Hurt as the War Doctor. So there you go. Whoone.co.uk is where to buy the place to buy all your Doctor Who.
Whoone.co.uk.
Well, I did not use them when I ordered stuff for my birthday. Last night, though, I'm sorry.
Can I just say, I'm a bit appalled by that. Isn't everybody else appalled by that?
No.
Well, no. I mean, do you want to pay the shipping?
Not personally, no. I don't need to pay shipping. I just drive out to Ryde and buy it. What's the matter with you?
We have stateside sources, you know, where the shipping's a lot cheaper.
I'm using Amazon and got free shipping.
Yeah.
What I'm getting is a backpack with the Seal of Rassilon on it.
Ooh.
Very good, yes.
And because my briefcase that I would carry my stuff back and forth to work is falling apart, so I'm getting that. I'm also getting a little Tomorrowland pin from the movie that came out last year.
Yes. Well, has anybody seen Fantastic Beasts?
Yes, I loved it.
It's really good, isn't it? Oh, no, be quiet, Debbie. So, Rock and you, Mary. Go and watch it. It's a really good film.
Yes, it is.
Laurie Nick says, hey, catching a bit of the live cast.
Hey, well
hey,
done.
Hey, Laurie. All right, it's a bit of a shame because it's right at the end. So, as I said, we're recording probably on the 12th of December, and that will be our last...
What do you mean probably?
Actually, can I just check that? That might be the last one before the Christmas special's out. Yeah, it will be. So that will be the last of the journey until after Christmas, so maybe into the new year.
When will we do the Christmas special?
Well, somewhere around the 26th, 27th. It won't be 26th because I'm at a panto. 27th and back at work. We'll sort it out a bit nearer the time, but it'll be as close as possible to the...
Well, then I won't speak to anyone before Christmas, then.
No. You can. They are available to speak to on the internet.
That's a long time.
Oh, shut up.
It's Kirby's birthday tomorrow. It's mine in 2 weeks.
Well, you could have flown out to see him. What's the matter with you?
We're December babies. It's our time of year. Yep.
And the first
How come
was,
your birthday's not on my calendar?
Fred's boyfriend just had a birthday as well on the 1st.
Yeah.
Okay. My sister's birthday. Oh, my God. When's my sister's birthday?
Oh, dear.
2 days' time. I sent the parcel ages ago. It's fine.
That's just as well. By the way, we did run a competition a few weeks ago. For those that are interested, we did run a competition a few weeks ago in which I can't even remember what the blimmin'... I think it was what story... Who wrote the story Dalek? Or what story did Rob Shearman write from the first series, which was Dalek? It was a very easy thing. And because what we were going to give away...
During the Ambassadors of Death, which I missed.
Yeah, but no, the... When we
I know, I'm not eligible.
No, we had one of these, a doodle by Rod Shearman. There's one that he did for me personally, but there was also another one he did to the listeners.
That.
He did it to the listeners of the podcast. And because no listeners could be bothered to actually answer the question, I sent it off to Jeff Waddle. So now he owns it.
I thought you'd done that, yeah.
Yes.
Well, speaking of Rob Shearman, he was one of the guests at Chicago Tardis, so I had fun time talking with him.
Rob Shearman.
He autographed my book, Running Through Corridors, and he drew a big Dalek picture for me on the page.
It wasn't Running Through Paris then.
Running Through Paris.
Did you say Rob Shearman autographed a book for you?
Yes, he did.
Because I've got this book here. Well, see this book?
Post.
Finish book. It says, Professor Bernice Summerfield, Life During Wartime, a short story anthology edited by Paul Cornell, signed, says, hey, hi, Adam, best wishes, Rob Shearman. There you go. So that was quite cheap, actually. It only cost me £2. Yeah, go on.
Yeah.
Hey, you need to post a picture of it.
Okay, I will. Yeah, I'll take a picture and post.
Have you posted any pictures from the convention?
Well, I've posted other people's pictures because I don't have a smartphone.
Oh.
So I've posted a few things on 20 megabyte, of what was there.
Yeah, come on. More pictures.
Okay.
Thank you. Who's sending messages around?
Me.
Debbie Melrose.
Yes.
Right then. So until the 12th of December, when Kirby will be 39 years old, we'll pass his 39th birthday. Thank you for listening to the show again, those of you that did. Thank you for showing up for the show again, for those of you who did. See you again next time. Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, is Andy still there?
Okay. Where's Andy?
Oh, no, Andy left a while ago.
Oh, did he?
He did?
Yeah, he wanted to find out when we were stopping.
Okay.
And,
on behalf of Andy, be seeing you.
Be seeing
you. That's why he was pushing to know when we were recording this, because he wanted to get off.
That's what she said.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.